Happy birthday, Judy Collins. She was born this day, May the 1st, in 1939, and one of the sweetest singers in America, and that's one of my favorite songs of all time, so I can't hear that song sung by anybody but Judy Collins especially. So that's one of our songs we will be featuring today on this on our day in history, May the 1st, and reminding you, before we jump into our program, that Thursday, May the 1st, WEAA is celebrating jazz in the community at Phase 10 Restaurant and Lounge. Thursday Night Live, hosted by WEAA's own bassman, features jazz keyboardist Aaron Rhines, which means it will fill up. The broadcast begins at 8 p.m. More details online at phase10.com or 410-462-2010. We are going to begin our show talking about the world of children's literature and children's literature as it represents and doesn't represent in our society children of color. And it is a huge issue, really. We've talked about this before on the air and with a number of panelists. And when you look at the statistics that you can see around this particular issue, it's fairly glaring. One of the things that I read recently about this was that of the books published in 3,800 books or so published children's literature in the year 2013, only 63 were by black authors, African-American authors, only 48 by Latino authors. Only 253 as a total, or 8% of all books, were about children of color or had children of color within the book, which is a very small number. So what does that really mean, and why should we care about that? I'll kind of channel Paul Coates, the publisher of Black Classic Press, a little bit with his response to that question when we were at a gathering some weeks back at Red Amos for another panel discussion, and see what our guests think about that. And let me introduce our guests saying that. We are here with Dr. Mubina Kirmani, who is professor at the College of Education at Towson University, author of Bundle of Secrets, Savita Returns Home. Good to meet you. Welcome to WEA and the Mark Steiner Show.
Thank you,
Mark. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Helen Nguyen is back with us again. Helen is the marketing director for the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of African American History and Culture. Good to have you back, Helen.
Thanks for having me.
And they're hosting the second annual African American Children's Book Festival on Saturday, May the 10th from 1 to 4 p.m. And we'll talk more about that in the course of this conversation. And we'll be joined shortly by Dr. Donnell Lamar Shields is author of Miguel's Amazing Adventure. You all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages, or you can tweet me here at Mark Steiner. We'd like to hear your thoughts. I mean, this is a complex kind of question because, you know, for years and years, I was thinking about this quote. Let me just read this quote and start it this way. There was a piece that I was reading that actually came out of the New York Times a bunch of years back about children's books. And, well, I can't find that quote. As soon as I do, I will bring that to you. It was just here in my hand a moment ago. Here it goes, yeah. A woman named Nancy Larrick created this huge conversation around this question back in 1965. The article she wrote in the New York Times was called "The All-White World of Children's Books." She said, "As I discovered who I was as a black teenager in a white-dominated world, I saw that these characters, these lives, were not mine. What I wanted, needed, really, was to become an integral and valued part of the mosaic that I saw around me." And that's what she said these many years ago in 1965, and here we are in 2014. And so talking about it, talk us about what you think, why this is this gap in our literature for our children has taken so long to even come to a discussion in public and to really being addressed.
Thank you, Mike. I think one of the big reasons is that we still have to go a long way in developing a culture for not only reading but also writing amongst adults and children. And we have to consider how we can bring books that help children see themselves in it, make it meaningful for them, and find ways of developing, new writers that are going to begin expressing their experiences more and more through books. That's my initial thought on this.
And that's why the museum is really committed to this African-American Children's Book Fair, because part of the puzzle really is exposing young children now to images and stories that reflect them, so that they begin developing really a love and passion for reading and writing and sharing their stories and feeling like their experiences matter. And then they grow up to become authors and illustrators themselves.
What is underlying this? Is it underlying this, the fear that the marketing world says that who own books, children's books publishing, that they won't sell because there are people like children of color on the cover? Or is it that it's not in their world, or they reject so much and so few people write these books to start with? I mean, what's pushing this?
I think that we need to look at cultures in a certain way. You know, I grew up in Kenya, and my ancestry is from India. And growing up in Kenya, I know very clearly that people of African origin, Indian origin, have a very strong oral tradition. Mm-hmm. And so I remember growing up that stories were told to me, not read to me. And I think that there needs to be a transition. We need to preserve that oral ways of expressions. But at the same time, we need to find ways of transitioning into written text. I remember in Kenya when early 1960s, when we got independence, the African writers began writing oral literature, because they realized that if they did not, the children would not have a way to, find ways to access information that was written in schools. So I think there needs to be this transition between oral and written literature. And I think that there are maybe other reasons, but maybe I'll pass it on to Helen.
Well, I mean, in places outside the United States, I mean, let's say in Kenya or in Tanzania or Nigeria, are there bodies of children's literature that we're not aware of here that are written by African authors?
I'm sure that we have authors like Gugi Wa Thiong'o and Michelle Mugo and Wallace Soyinka. I have not come across literature used in schools here by those authors. We have a lot of...
There are a lot of African authors, but there are African authors who are writing young adult and children's literature.
The question is whether they have, whether we have access to those.
And are they there?
They are there, of course. They are absolutely there. We just need to let schools know more about it, teachers to know about all that, authors and their works.
And I think it's also having the resources and the gumption to make the plunge and say there is the demand out there. I think one example are Wade and Cheryl Hudson, who will be at
the publishers.
Book fair, who had trouble finding titles for their children when they became new parents. And out of that frustration, they founded their own publishing firm. And those titles have been enormously popular. They're going on 100 books for targeted to children of color now. And that was 20 years ago.
Right. I mean, they're the largest African-American-owned publishing company for children, correct?
I
think they are.
They're certainly one of the most important and trailblazers.
So I'm curious if you all read and work with your children. I mean, 410-319-8888. I'd like to hear your thoughts. What do you read to your kids? What did you read as a kid? How important is this literature, the question of literature, to you? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinhuis@gmail.com. Love to hear what you're thinking about the books that you read to your kids, the stuff your kids are reading, how difficult or easy it is for you to find it. We have some bookstores that specialize in it in Baltimore, like Everyman's store on North Avenue, but they're few and far between. So what are your thoughts at 410-319-8888? I'd really like to hear your thinking about that. I mean, one of the things that Paul Coates said in a conversation, who publishes Black Classic Press, which is not a children's book press, but is a press that finds literature written by Africans and African-Americans that from the 15th and 19th century and republishes them, said that he doesn't care, that he sees this as an opportunity. He said rather than bemoaning the fact that Simon & Schuster and all these great companies will not, huge companies will not publish them, that we just have to publish them, that people just have to get up and start doing it themselves, and that the world of publishing is changing so deeply that this may be the way that we address the problem.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think self-publishing would be one big way to go. My own book, Bundle of Secrets, Savita Returns Home, is self-published book. And I just found that that was a great way to publish and get it out there and then get recognition slowly from that. So I think there are ways of expressing ourselves, authors of color, and this may be one great way to do that.
Yeah. And I think it's also, important to say that these children's books are not just for children of color, that they really help introduce all children and
right.
parents to the world in which we live.
Well, I'm going to talk about that when we come back, that particular issue just raised, because I think that we kind of want to often – there are two questions here. One is how we get greater access and find more books by authors of color about children of color, but also with children of color that are in the books themselves, maybe in a mass of children – and why that's important, and not to kind of ghettoize it into thinking that books about Mexican-American children are only for Mexican-American children to read. So, I mean, that or anything. So then we'll come back to that. 410-319-8888. So you're on the air.
Hi. This is a great discussion. I have a two-year-old son that we recently discovered is deaf, and I also studied illustration at school. And I've been struggling to kind of find educational materials and even toys that kind of speak to, like, his race and not necessarily racially, like, motivated toys because he's a boy, so he plays with trucks and things of that nature. But a lot of the times, like, in the books, I would just like to see more representations of him. And at this time, like, I read a lot of, like, things that are kind of broad and don't necessarily, like, have figures in them and, like, have animal characters. But I was just wondering if you have any recommendations, particularly for a deaf child. That's pretty much what I was talking about.
Yeah, what you're raising is really important. You know, one of the things I was thinking about what you just said, so, and George, your next caller, we're going to come to your call. I was reading a piece, an interview with Matt De La Pena, who is a young adult author, a Latino American, and one of the things he asks in his conversations is, where's the African American Harry Potter or the Mexican Katniss? You know, I mean, where are those things in our books? And I'm thinking about all the stories we've been doing lately, and really focusing on the Afrofuturist movement. And people like Octavia Butler and the books that she wrote, and thinking about this is so important to kind of, when you look at these things, these superheroes, thinking about where the future may be, to get a sense of these magical figures being people of color, not just always white people, who are going to lead us off into the great beyond. You know what I mean? and so, I guess, have you attempted to be an illustrator yourself? Has it been difficult?
It has, and I think another issue a lot of people, a lot of my colleagues at least, have run into is funding or lack of funding, lack of jobs, and the whole starving artist lifestyle. And I think, I mean, like, I know I'm more than willing to kind of, like, create characters that represent various cultures and kids with various abilities. So I just think the major issue is, like, finding those jobs and finding those people that are willing to pay for that.
Right. And the pay part's important.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much for that caller. Appreciate you being part of the show. Let's get another caller in here and then come right back to our panel of 410-319-8888. George, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, welcome, Mark. Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good. Hey, a guy at my church told me one thing that he wished that he had done with his children growing up was to make them read more. And, you know, they're successful kids, but I thought, wow, that's pretty poignant advice. So I know my schedule is pretty busy and my kids have activities, and it just seems like my wife and I are just a cab company for them. But I thought, you know, where can I just get some time to just make sure that my son is reading beyond, you know, what he's given in school? And I came across a book called Realionaire by Farrah Gray. And he's a young entrepreneur, and it talked about how, you know, his family was really poor growing up in the Chicago housing tenement. And he ended up becoming, you know, a millionaire. But what I started doing was on our way to school, because it's like about a half hour to 45-minute drive, I would have my son every morning, he would read. And we would turn off the radio, and he would just read, and he would read out loud. And, you know, I found myself really looking forward to, you know, this half an hour of reading every morning about this young man. And it's been really exciting, and I think I enjoy it more than my son, but I think later on, I think later on he'll, you know, be able to reap the rewards of a lot of the life lessons and the wisdom that this young man has demonstrated through his life. I mean, because he wasn't born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He
right.
pretty much had to work at everything that worked for everything that he had. So, you know, there's no excuse. You know, if you have the desire to do something, you can actually do it.
Right.
And that's a message, that's a universal message that anyone can take with them.
George,
so anyways, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you so much for calling.
And I want to add to that that there are other ways of bringing parents and children into the book world. At Towson University, we had a program where mothers and fathers would drop their children in the mornings, would then take a few minutes to sit with one of our faculty, and the faculty would help the parent who would bring in younger siblings and have a little circle time of reading before they went back. And that was one good way where the school can open up doors for parents who are dropping children to just take that extra 15 minutes to half an hour to read, you know,
mm-hmm.
and also select books to take back to their homes.
Yeah, on the Reginald F. Lewis Museum website, we have listed the authors and illustrators who will be at the book fair next Saturday, which is a free event and appropriate for all ages. So that's a starting point where you can, and we've hyperlinked their names to their website, so you can find other titles that they've written. So there's a starting point for finding books about children of color.
410-319-8888. Please join us. Love to hear more from you about the books you're reading, the books your kids are reading, your thoughts on children's literature and how to broaden it in our country, in our society, what we need to do. 410-319-8888. We'll get to those calls coming in just a minute. And I was thinking about Charles Johnson, who's one of America's great philosophers, wrote Middle Passage in many of the books. He now has a children's book out with his daughter, which is about a young geeky black kid who invents a time machine. It's called Emery's World. It's great. It's a great book, and he sends out episodes every week that go out online. Besides the books that they publish, that may be part of what we have to do. But I'm curious, Dr. Cromani, tell us about Bundle of Secrets. I've not seen the book. I'd like to know what is the plot. What's the story?
It's a story, you know, that draws from my experience. Having been born and raised in Kenya with ancestry from India. And the book is about this little girl, Savita, who is bidding farewell to her family in India and taking this big boat, Dhow, with her mom and baby brother, Raja, and coming back home to Kenya with this big bundle of secrets that gets the contents of which get revealed when she reaches home. In Kenya. And the reason for writing this book is because I feel that having had the Indian ancestry and being raised in Kenya, I could bring in a perspective of two cultures, Kenyan culture and Indian culture, two children. Also to kind of break the stereotype about Africa, in that we often think of people of Africa looking, you know, that looks a certain way, that we have a kind of a very, you know, homogeneous view of African people. And yet, well before migration happened in America, we've had people from Asia, Europe, Middle East coming into Africa. And so we have diversity in Africa, and I think there can be lessons drawn about how people can live together in harmony from Africa itself. I grew up in this little town of Mombasa on the east coast of Africa, where I was exposed to, you know, Arabic culture and Indian culture and Portuguese culture and, of course, the African culture. And it really enriched my life as a child. And the book tries to draw upon those experiences for children.
Yeah, and I think that's so important. I mean, the whole notion of enriching and broadening our world. I mean, it's tough for us to hear, but we should wrestle with kind of the question of race and business and publishing and what that actually, how that affects what our children see, which is something that can't be let go with all the talk of how we have to make it broader and multidimensional and make a new America and self-publishing. We also have to deal with the question of race in our big publishing companies. Do you have folks coming to talk about that? Is that going to be part of the conversation you're having at Reginald Love Lewis?
This is targeted more towards kids and families and giving them the opportunity to meet one-on-one with authors and illustrators and create sort of a really intimate environment and show that reading is really fun. We're going to have Mama Linda Goss and Papa Ed Stokes. I mean, how can you not love that name? Doing interactive storytelling and craft activities and things like that. So it is more of a, you know, family fun afternoon. But, you know, you're absolutely right that there is the more larger question, so underlying the reason for this event.
Let us open back the phones here. 410-319-8888. Janelle Whitlock, you're on the air. Welcome. Good to have you with us.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. I'm calling with kind of a question, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I've written a story called Saida, the Butterfly Princess, and I wrote it about a year ago, and it's copywritten, but I don't have any illustrations, nor do I have any publishing. And basically, she's a young girl who's around 6 or 7, and she's learning about giving without expecting anything in return. So it's about chores and helping, and it kind of has a magical component in the end where she gets her wish, which is to be a butterfly princess. But there's some, you know, African-centered terminology in there, and it's kind of just an offering for us, but not necessarily for us. It can be for any child. I wanted to know, I guess, what my next step could be after I've already written the story.
Hmm. That's really interesting. This is what we have to do. We have to officially and legally take a very quick break. And we'll come back and conclude our conversation so you can kind of wrestle with Janelle's question, which I think is a great question. And I can see that Dr. Mbina Kermani was about to answer that question and let her do so when we come back from this break. So don't go away on the wit, and we'll be right back.
Drinking like civilized ladies and men. No longer need
That was the great Spike Jones, Cocktail for Two, down this day in 1965 and going into break. This was the day that Johann Ludwig Bach passed away, the German violinist composer. We played his piece of music that was the son of the great Bach composer himself. So 410-319-8888, you were going to tackle Janelle's question, Mobina, before we...
Yes, Janelle, great question. You know, as a struggling author myself, I can relate to your struggles. For me, English is a third language, so I had to, you know, find editors to make sure that the language was well crafted for the audience. But the next step that I see for you is, of course, illustrations. And you may want to, depending on your budget, look even into student artists in universities, colleges, in fine arts programs who are, you know, willing to kind of... you know, help with the illustrations with probably a lower budget, and they want to get their names out there. That may be one good way, but I have to tell you, there are fantastic online resources. If you just type in illustrations for children's books, you know, there you'll find that there are lots of people out there who are, and they will send you samples of their work online for you to see and determine whether the kind of art you're looking for will match the text of your book. So resources are out there, and again, I would really consider student populations that are you know, artistic and willing to try out, explore. I want to wish you the very best in your book. It sounds like a wonderful book.
I'd like to hear more about that myself. So before we have to conclude, I want to make sure people know how to, where to come on a week from Saturday. But you had a quick thought on the meaning and the power of all this.
Absolutely. So, you know, we, you know, coming from education, we have theories of development and learning that focus on the importance of giving children a sense of belonging and love. You look at Abraham Maslow's theory, where in his hierarchy of needs, self-esteem is very important. And Erik Erikson's theory talks about the importance of, you know, the self-esteem, because if the child does not have that, it's actually going to impact the child's learning and achievement and reaching its full potential. And books are a great way for children to see themselves, to mirror, you know, a way to mirror their experiences and make them feel good about themselves. And if we have shortage of books and with increasing number of children from diverse backgrounds entering classrooms, it's very important that we have books with people, I mean, children of color. And I would say we need, you know, authors from various backgrounds, but in the end, it's the book that we produce. We can have white authors can do wonderful job of creating children's books. And we need to, from beginning, highlight books that give a sense of, you know, achievement and heroes and sheroes that children can see so that themselves can feel empowered in order to write. In Baltimore City, we have benches which says Baltimore reads, but we need to say further, Baltimore reads and writes.
Yes, I like that. Baltimore reads and writes. I want to thank both of you. Dr. Mobina Kermani, who is professor in the College of Education at Towson. Her book is Bundle of Secrets, Savita Returns Home. Helen Yuen is the marketing director at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of African American History and Culture. This event's coming up there, the second annual African American Children's Book Festival on Saturday, May 10th.
1 to 4, and it's free and open to all ages.
So you can go to rflewismuseum.org for more information, or just show up and bring your children and have a great day with books and children. Thank you both so much. Great meeting you. Good having you back, Helen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you all for calling in. Really appreciate you all being part of this program. We'll take a brief break, come back. It's time for Chauncey Whitehead and their annual, monthly visit on fitness. Stay with us.